Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Complete Interpreter, the podcast by me, Sophie Llewellyn Smith, otherwise known as The Interpreting Coach. Why The Complete Interpreter? Well, because you are more than just an interpreting or translation machine. And that's why I try to take a 360-degree view and bring you some holistic CPD, focusing on interpreting skills, mindset, use of language when interpreting, and who knows, perhaps this year will be the year that I actually say something about marketing, or perhaps it will be the year that I make a New Year's resolution to stop saying that I will talk about marketing, because I never will. Yes, this episode is about New Year's resolutions. I did think to myself, is it a bit cheesy to do an episode about New Year's resolutions? Happy New Year, by the way. I hope that 2024 brings you health and happiness, new adventures and discoveries. So yes, New Year's resolutions. Should I do an episode about this? Let me explain to you how this came about. In my last newsletter at the end of 2023, I gave some podcast recommendations and I asked people what podcasts they tended to listen to. And I was really happy to receive emails from quite a few readers of my newsletter, and many of them are perhaps listeners of this podcast. So it was so lovely to get those messages. Thank you to everybody who took the time to write to me and to wish me a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and to tell me what podcasts they listen to. Anya sent me a podcast recommendation of a podcast in German. And I thought, wow, it's ages since I listened to a podcast in German or in Greek. So, okay, I'm going to do this. And also, it was about psychology, which is right up my street. It's the kind of topic I'm interested in. So when I went out to walk the dog on Monday, I put on this podcast and listened to it with interest. And it was about New Year's resolutions. And it brought various things to mind. It made me think of some issues that I had been considering turning into a podcast anyway, because I had thought to myself late last year, maybe I should record an episode about outcome goals versus process goals. So listening to this podcast galvanized me, I suppose, gave me some new ideas. And so I thought, right, I'm going to do this. I am going to record an episode about New Year's resolutions. Do you make New Year's resolutions on the 1st of January? Is that a tradition in your life, or was it in your childhood? I can tell you that in my childhood it was, and I can't remember exactly, but I'm guessing perhaps that in my family, my parents would say, so what New Year's resolutions have you made? A while back, I came across one of my diaries that I must have written when I was about 14 or 15, and I looked at the New Year's resolutions. With horror, I read back some of the things I had written. It's not that they were terrible ideas. It's just that I was so hard on myself and the resolutions were so unrealistic. There was no way that I was going to do that for 365 days of the year. Some of them were things like, I will practice the piano for 30 minutes at least every day. And now I look at that kind of thing and I think, it's never going to happen. And so over the years, my New Year's resolutions became something more like New Year's intentions, I suppose. Something a bit gentler, something that I aspired to doing that year, but I didn't want to beat myself up about anymore. Because perhaps like me, you have set resolutions on the 1st of January, and it's really not long until you have failed in those resolutions. You just haven't stuck to them. Loads of people are like that. I mean, the most common New Year's resolutions are about losing weight, health and fitness. And that's the time of year when people buy a gym membership and they go two or three times and then they stop, or they never go at all. The gym subscription business booms in January and then nobody turns up in February. So speaking personally and thinking about other people as well, I think it's a bit sad that we make these resolutions almost as a stick to beat ourselves with when we almost know from the start that we're not going to stick to them consistently for 365 days of the year. So what's the point if it just becomes a way to fail? And over the years, I have understood more and more the value of consistency, not necessarily the big gestures, but that if you're trying to reach a goal, what's most important is showing up most of the time, 80% of the time, rather than telling yourself you're going to do it 100% of the time and then failing, just doing little and often and being consistent with it. Slowly, slowly, it's the tortoise that wins the race sometimes, much of the time probably. But before I go off into a rant about consistency or any other diversion, let me try and see if I can structure what I want to say today, which is not just about New Year's resolutions. It's about a desire to change in general, a desire to achieve a particular objective. So actually, this episode is about goal setting. When I was a personal fitness trainer years ago, I used to talk to my clients about setting SMART goals, and I still talk about SMART goals when it comes to interpreter training. And perhaps you have heard that acronym, which is about setting goals that are specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and time framed. That's more or less what the letters SMART stand for. The reasoning behind this, and I think it is a good reasoning, is that some people set themselves really vague goals. So, for example, they might say, I want to lose weight, or I want to get fit, or I want to become a better dancer. And if those goals remain so vague and nebulous, there's a good chance that people won't actually get down to the hard work of making it happen. It just remains wishful thinking or castles in the air. So I think there's a good reason to set SMART goals. If you say to yourself, oh, I want to run a marathon, but you don't say, I would like to run the London Marathon in April of this year, let's say, then if you don't have those more specific goals, you may just never do it. It'll just remain something that you've written down on the 1st of January and it doesn't happen. You've got to find a route map, I guess, is what I'm saying. That it's all well and good to have the big goal, but if you make it a SMART goal, then you have a map to get there. Or at least you have a clear destination, you know your starting point, and you can start building the intermediate steps to get there. So SMART goals work very well for some people. It allows them to be much more focused and precise about what they want to achieve. But SMART goals don't work for everybody. And the psychology behind this, I think, is this, that SMART goals are outcome goals generally. They're about what you want to achieve at the end of the day. They're not about celebrating the process and the journey in itself. So, for example, people might say, I want to add a new working language to my combination this year, or I want to lose 15 pounds this year, or I want to climb Mount Kilimanjaro in June. Okay, those are outcome goals. Now, the great thing about outcome goals is that when you're talking about them and deciding on them and thinking about them, you get a hit of dopamine. Your brain is already picturing you at the top of Mount Kilimanjaro, or having added Portuguese to your language combination. Think about all the opportunities that will open up for you. Or you picture yourself 15 pounds lighter, wearing a beautiful dress and going out and feeling confident, or whatever it is. So you're getting this really lovely dopamine hit where your brain goes, ah, yes, I love it. And that's the reward center in your brain lighting up from all the lovely dopamine then you have to actually do the things that you need to do to start moving towards that goal. So maybe that means that if you're trying to lose 15 pounds, you have to clear out the fridge and decide that you're going to start going to the gym 3 times a week or something like that. And it may be that for a week or 2 or 3 weeks, you're still fired up thinking about your goal and you're all gung-ho about it and you can keep your eye on the ball and you do it. But gradually, you're not necessarily getting a dopamine hit from the things that you need to do to achieve that big goal. Because maybe the things that you need to do are things that you don't enjoy that much, like having to get up in the morning to exercise, or sitting down and learning some Portuguese vocabulary every 2 days, or going out running in the dark and rain, which you don't enjoy because you're working up to your marathon. So at that point, you're doing things that are in themselves not always massively enjoyable. And you're not getting the dopamine from that. But basically, the costs of doing those activities, which are not always intrinsically fun or always intrinsically motivational, begin to outweigh all that lovely dopamine and motivation that you had when you set your big goal. And that's when people stop. They just give up. They stop going to the gym. They start drinking coffee again or alcohol or whatever it is. They start eating cheese again because they had been doing veganuary and they're, oh no, I really want a pizza. And there are rodent studies, rat studies, that show that things are happening in the rat's brains at that point, you know, just before they give up on a task that becomes too hard from a motivational point of view. So there are biological mechanisms at play there. And that is something that can affect some people who have set SMART goals. So I'm not trying to say that SMART goals are pointless and we should all stop setting SMART goals. I think the biggest message from this podcast episode is one that I try to send out a lot, and that is that everybody's different and you need to know yourself. So SMART goals are brilliant for some people, but for some people, they're less brilliant because those people find it really hard to keep that long-term motivation and to keep in the long game. They're not getting enough day-to-day dopamine hits or motivation or whatever you want to call it to keep going with something that seems effortful. And at that point, they go, oh, the costs outweigh the benefits, because the benefit is maybe in 6 months. And what about the cost now? I can't have my pizza. So dang it. I'm trying not to swear here. I'm just going to have pizza tonight. One pizza won't hurt. Maybe you recognize this in yourselves. I certainly recognize that thought process in myself sometimes. And today I want to suggest 2 different options. If that is something that you recognize, if SMART goals don't work very well for you, I want to suggest 2 different things. The first one is about setting lots of intermediate process goals. So let's say your big goal is, this year I want to get fit and I want to do some weight training because I've heard that it's important to combat osteoporosis and when you're an older adult. Your process goals can be written out in quite a lot of detail. So you might think to yourself, okay, for the weight training, I am going to go to the gym 3 times a week, and then you look in your diary, you find a suitable time slot and you schedule the time. Or you think to yourself, okay, I want to find a great app where I can follow along with a workout, and I'm going to need to buy myself a set of basic dumbbells. And then I will follow that app 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I also need to be drinking more water, prioritizing protein intake, and I will start swimming 2 times a week. And you can break those goals down even further. So let's say every week you would set your process goals for that week. and they might be very similar to the previous ones, or they might have extra things or fewer things. For example, in week one, you would have find the app that you want to follow, buy the dumbbells, clear room in your bedroom where you're going to exercise in the morning, get a yoga mat. I don't know, you see what I mean. And then in the second week, they might be slightly different. You might be working with heavier weights as the weeks go on. You might be increasing your swimming time, etc., etc. But the point is that those are the steps that will take you to your big goal. But temporarily, you don't need to focus on that big goal. And you don't need to think to yourself every day or every week, oh, am I fit enough? Have I done it? Oh, I haven't yet done it. Oh, I missed several sessions, so there's no point. I'm never going to make it to that goal. Now, none of those thought processes need to occur, because instead you're looking at achieving your process goals and celebrating those process goals and feeling confident that if you just keep plugging away at those goals, you will make it to your big goal in the end. So this approach is about celebrating small steps and consistency. Ha, look, it didn't take me long to circle back to that. And to celebrate the effort, if you like. It's not about the achievement, although in the back of your mind, you can feel confident that if you keep going, you'll make it to that achievement. It's about learning to appreciate and celebrate and mentally congratulate yourself for taking all the little steps, because those little steps are goals in themselves. You have actually done something amazing by taking those steps. So instead of perhaps being dismissive of that and going, oh, I've done my workout today, or oh, I have to do my workout. No, those things are achievements in themselves. And if you can reframe that and change your mindset around the process goals, you can get a dopamine hit. You can engage your brain's reward center for taking those small steps. And that makes it more motivational, and it makes it more likely that you will reach your bigger goals. That's one approach then. The other approach is inspired by what I heard in my German podcast, and that in turn was inspired by a blog post. If you look in the show notes, I'll give you the link to that blog post. And the approach here is about not setting New Year's resolutions, but working on the basis of virtues. And when I heard this in the podcast, it was the word Tugend. I thought to myself, God, I'm sure that means virtues. Is that really what they mean? That we should be aiming for certain virtues? That sounds very Victorian and moralistic. And I was thinking, what virtues are we talking about? It's a bit too much like, you know, character defects and being virtuous. But by the end of the podcast episode, and once I'd read the blog post, I understood what the presenters and what the writer were getting at. And I suppose maybe I would phrase it more as values than virtues. But that's just a question of semantics. It's what it means to you. And I'll give you a few examples so that you can see what the podcast was getting at and what the blog post was getting at. By the way, this was a blog post by somebody called Nick Wignall. I have never heard of him, but there you go, Nick Wignall. And his blog post is entitled Ditch Your New Year's Resolutions and Pick a New Year's Virtue Instead. He was giving examples like, instead of setting yourself a goal, a smart goal, pick your virtue that is important to you and work back from that to the habits that will move you towards that virtue. So, for example, he gives the example of being a good friend. Let's say that this year you want to be a better friend. So you say to yourself, right, that's what I'm working towards. And the way that I'm going to do that or start doing that is that I'm going to call up a friend of mine every Friday afternoon. And that becomes non-negotiable. As the weeks go by, it becomes a habit, and then it becomes sort of part of you, that you have now phoned your friend 26 weeks in a row, and that makes you a good friend or a better friend. So that's a very simple example, and I get where the author is going. Again, it's this idea of consistency, I guess. And he frames it in terms of habits, that you are trying to build habits that move you towards that virtue. The way that I see this is that goals, SMART goals, are very much about what you want to do, what you want to achieve, what you want to do. You know, I want to pass my driving test. I want to climb Mount Everest. I want to run a marathon. I want to take up the piano. Maybe this is just me. Maybe yours are not about doing. And in fact, I spoke to my very good friend Maria a few days ago. Well, she sent me a voice message, because we often exchange voice messages, and that's just a really lovely way of staying connected. And again, I often listen to her messages while I'm walking the dog. And I had sent her a Happy New Year message. She sent me one back and said, my resolutions for this year are to say yes to life more and to be more open. And she gave a number of other things, which I won't share with you, but they were framed and phrased so differently from mine. So differently. Mine was so much more sort of practical, tangible, pragmatic, but related to doing. Whereas Maria's intentions, or however she called them, were much more about a way of being, how she wanted to approach life and the world this year. And this idea of virtues that I've been talking about, or for me, maybe more values, is about being. It's not so much about doing. It's about the person that you want to be. For example, the virtue that you are moving towards might be something like being more creative. It might be being an active person. It might be making sure that you are aging well and staying healthy. It might be being a good friend. It might be deciding that you want to be more reliable. That kind of thing that I think says more about you as a person, and also how you want to be seen by other people, than if you set an outcome-based goal. Now, some people, I'm not saying everybody, but some people, I think, will be more motivated by this type of approach, which is based on the person that you want to be, and it's based on a positive thing. I think sometimes it feels less and it sounds less punitive, if you see what I mean, than some of the doing type goals. Because the doing type goals sometimes involve a lot of hard work, and when you break down specifically what needs doing, it can seem pretty daunting and overwhelming, and almost like an opportunity to fail, especially if you've tried doing those things many times in the past. Whereas I think this virtue or values approach is rather a positive one about, I guess, being a better person. After all, resolutions and intentions are generally about, or often about, being a better person, I think. Nobody wants to achieve bad things or things that make us a worse person. So I think often people choose things that involve self-improvement. They are trying to improve themselves in some way, you know, being fitter, better, kinder, less stressed, you're more relaxed, I don't know. So that's an approach that I think is worth trying if you find the SMART goals either daunting or actually demotivating at the end, because you're not getting the dopamine hit. I think the nice thing about this virtue or value-based approach is that it can make you feel virtuous. For all that I was dismissive about that word, it can create a virtuous circle where you take your small steps, you turn them into habits, and you can see that that is making you a different person. Maybe it's wrong to say a better person, right? I don't want to be judgmental, but it is changing you in the direction that you want to move. So I hope that some of you will find that useful. The other thought I had when I was thinking about this approach was, first of all, how it fits in pretty well with growth mindset principles, and I'm a big advocate of growth mindset principles, but also that it ties in well with the idea of finding your why. I don't know if you've ever tried to follow some kind of program, and again, I'm talking from my experience as a fitness trainer and a complementary therapist here, that if you go and look at fitness apps or you work with a coach of any kind, they will often say you need to identify your why, your deeply held why, because that is where your motivation comes from. And you'll say to them, but my why is just I want to lose 10 pounds. And they'll go, but yes, why do you want to lose 10 pounds? Is it because you want to be able to wear your nice clothes in your wardrobe so that you feel confident? Or is it because you want to be able to keep up with your kids and not be huffing and puffing while your children are running around in the playground and you can't keep up with them? Or is it because you're now 55 years old and you're worried that you're going to be in poor health into old age, and so you want to make sure that you're protecting your health for the future? And coaches will often try to get you to dig down to that why, because it is the source of motivation. And when you are lacking motivation and you don't feel like getting up at 5 a.m. to go for a run or whatever it is, then you need to tap into that big why to remind yourself of why you're doing it. And the why is a deeper thing sometimes than the superficial goal, the smart goal that you have set yourself. So this why, I think, if you've ever gone through that process of trying to find your why for, you know, why you want to change jobs or why you want to get fit or whatever it is, why you want to learn a new language, then that why is often connected to who you want to be as a person and how you want to be seen by others. And it's about your identity, really. So I think that ties in quite well with this idea of seeking a value or a virtue to move towards and to motivate yourself. You know, things like being creative or being active or being giving back to the community, those relate to very deep whys, I think, about helping out other people, or, I don't know, being a good Christian, or wanting to be more present for your family, or whatever it is. Okay, I think that is what I wanted to say. In summary, SMART goals can be absolutely brilliant. They can help you identify very clearly what you want to achieve. They don't work for everybody, or maybe they work some of the time with some goals, but not with others. If they don't work, have a think about your process goals and how much you can define your process goals and celebrate them, so that you're not always focusing on the outcome and the fact you haven't yet achieved it and that that is a failure. Secondly, a different approach is thinking about a virtue, in inverted commas, or a value about you as a person and the person that you want to be this year. And then what small habits can help move you towards that person that you want to be. I hope that's given you some interesting ideas. I would love to hear from you about your New Year's resolutions or intentions or virtues, or whether you think it's a really stupid idea to set New Year's resolutions, because frankly, if we have something that we want to achieve, We should be able to start it anytime. November the 29th, April the 4th. Why should it be on the 1st of January? Why should there be anything magical about that? So let me know. My email is info@theinterpretingcoach.com. I love reading your emails. I love also hearing your suggestions for future podcast episodes. And you can find a link in the show notes to a very short form where you can let me know what you would like me to talk about next or soon. No promises. I read them all very, very carefully. If I feel that I have something useful to contribute, then I will try to record a podcast episode on that subject. Wishing you all the very best for 2024. I hope it's a very happy year for you. Take care.